Very good.
I got this. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Israel and raise money to adopt us.
Yeah. You're on the internet, aren't you?
Uh-oh, what's going to be?
Don't miss you. They were handed
what's going to happen?
I know. People are going to be listening to you around the world.
Okay. First of all, it was a big schuss to be here. When my father told me he wanted me to come, I said, for sure, if that's what you want. Now, besides for Kibbutz Avayim, besides for that, I actually have very fond thoughts whenever I think about this kollel. My dad is very much very excited whenever he talks about the kollel. It's not my mako, it's not my place, but I figured give a shtickle bracha. It happens to be a shtickle family connection. I think Rabbi Levine probably remembers. He's a very close friend of mine, Moshe Piller. I learn with him all day long. He's the first cousin of Rabbi Levine. I feel like a little bit family. So there's a little bracha to the Eilomer. Should keep going, stagging, and doing wonderful things. So I think everybody knows that nowadays the Daf Yomi is learning the Dorim. Yeah, I think they learned Daf Yomi.
Halacha.
Okay. Okay, perfect.
The shul has to be separate from this.
Very nice. So I spent a few years working on the Dharam. So my father, I think that's why my father mentioned to talk a little bit on the Dharam. Chavad Daf Yomi, I guess. Chavad the Dharam. One shaila that I often get, that people often ask me, is what happened to all the halachal maisa shalas about the Dharam? If you look at all the old tshuvas from Rishonim, the Rashba, the Mashal, you take out a tshuva sefer, there used to be so many tshuvas written about Nedarim. And let me explain why. Because Nedarim is a very powerful thing. It's very, very powerful. If you look in the psukim, it's an opportunity, it's a halacha, we'll call it. It's a parsha in the Torah that allows us to create new mitzvahs, a new yisurim, and it yields a lot of power. There's a lot of power that one could yield with his speech. I think one of the most famous cases in the Gemara about such an example was, you have to go no further than Rabbi Akiva. I don't know if anybody knows the story of how Rabbi Akiva started. He wasn't such a big rabbi when Rabbi Akiva was in Shidduchim. I don't know if he had a nickname or not. I don't know how he went on the street, Rabbi Akiva.
What's the nickname? Like a chamor.
He said that the Talmid HaChamim by like a chamor. Very good. He said, Rabbi Akiva did not get along with the Talmid HaChamim apparently, or at least he didn't understand exactly what the Talmid HaChamim were about. So this young Akiva, when he was in Shidduchim, his father-in-law wasn't so excited, or his prospective father-in-law wasn't so excited about taking him as a Shidduch, and he made a vow to not allow him to derive benefit from any of his estate. And he was a very, very wealthy man, very rich man. So this actually, believe it or not, is a tool that was used, and I'm not recommending at all, you'll see why in a second, but it was used for maybe a couple of thousands of years even, by different people in class. So whenever they got into a fight, whether it was a father-in-law, mother-in-law, sometimes it was with, there's a whole parak in Shas talking about with spouses, it's a complicated issue when a person gets upset, and a person says to his relative, he's like, okay, I'm cutting you off, I'm taking a neder now, I'm disallowing you, I have the power to stop you from deriving any benefit from anything that I own. This is one of the usages, one of the halachas. It used to be much more common with nedarim. And a lot of tshuvas written about this, because besides for individuals, they used to get into fights, there used to be communities like that, where a community might decide that a certain person, they didn't like them, they wanted to cut them out of the community, there might have been other type of communal practices. Therefore, there were a lot of halachas that actually came up when certain people came, they took vows, and they said, okay, we don't want you, you're out. So if you look in the tshuvas form, a lot of tshuvas written about this. What happened? How come we don't find us nowadays? How come we don't find Baruch Hashem by my chasna? I don't remember my father ever going near this, exercising this power, Baruch Hashem, but there are a lot of stories There are a lot of stories in the Gemara that talk about this with a father and a son, a famous case of Manas B'Schairin. I'm not going to get into it now. But there are a lot of different stories where even a parent to a son said he's upset about the shirk or is upset about something about the wedding, and they would come and they would exercise this power of disallowing certain people to derive benefit or being guests at the wedding. You know that happened?
No, I remember your wedding.
I remember my wedding, okay. I was nice and calm, right?
Nice and calm.
Yeah.
I remember your mother.
Exactly. So, Baruch Hashem, came out very well. And we're here to talk about it 15 years later, Baruch Hashem. So, what happened? So, if you look in the Gemara Nedarim, Chazal had a very strong interest to stop people from taking the Nedarim. And it's based on a passage in Kehelis, and they said it's better for a person not even to take a vow and keep it, then it's better to not take a vow at all. In other words, if you have two options on the table, don't take a vow, or take a vow and keep it, it's better not to take a vow at all. That's what the Gemara says, a famous statement in the Gemara. And I said there's one example, I tell this to people often in the street, there's one example that in Chazal really were able to change the practice amongst the Jewish people over the centuries. It was something that people used to exercise, used to wield this power, and they stopped doing it more or less, this specific thing. And really, it gives credit, it's a testament to the power of Chazal, the Rabbanim, to try to stop something that theoretically could be very dangerous and cause a lot of issues.
Except for today, there's a case in Elad. It's right now in the Bagatz. You know what I'm talking about?
No, tell me.
There's a woman had an apartment. She had three daughters, and she had a room lady, and maybe she was a single mother. And the neighbor on top, he wanted to build a sukkah. He wanted to build a balcony over her. And he asked her a shul, so she says, no. He says, but you only have girls. You don't need a sukkah. She says, I'm building a sukkah. I don't want you to build. And he didn't care. And Erev Rosh Hashanah, he built a balcony. And she went to court. She didn't go to the entire, she went to court to get an injunction against him. So the other guy went to Besen. And Besen put out a hazmana, which he didn't answer. And they put a cherem on her in the whole city.
Wow.
But the mistake they made was that the Besen put out the cherem under the rabbinical chief rabbi of Elad.
Uh-huh.
So she's suing now the Supreme Court that the government has no authority to do that.
Wow.
Plus, even if it's in a virus, you can't do mamonos without the both studs.
Wow. Okay, so this is
the cherem.
This issue I'm not going to get into specifically. There is discussions in Shulchan Aruch, and we will talk about things that are going to maybe touch on this point, even actually maybe more specifically about women singing the sukkah. We'll see. See if we get there. But anyways, as much as the classic halach of Nedarim is not so applicable, it's a false statement. It would be incorrect to say that it doesn't apply to halacha. In fact, there are many, many different situations where Nedarim and Shavuos do apply to halacha. I thought I'll just start when I think through Nedarim, so I'll try to start, let's try to start sort of as things move along Nedarim, where things come up and maybe are very negeya to halacha. So the very first Indian that's brought up in the Nedarim, and this is the way the Gemara starts, according to all the Rishonim, where the Rishonim introduce the Gemara Nedarim, is that there are two classic types of Nedarim. There's Nidre Isser and Nidre Hegdish. There's Nidre Isser, where we make a vow that we can't derive benefit from things, and there's Nidre Hegdish, when we say that something has a certain status. Now, I think most people, when they think about which one's obsolete, they probably assume right away to say that the more obsolete one is Nidre Hegdish, because we don't have karbonis nowadays. And in fact, probably the most germane issue when it comes to this concept of Nidre Hegdish, this concept of Nidre Hegdish is probably when we have an example where we don't make Nidre Hegdish. I think when many people think about Nidre Hegdish Lalacha, the first thing that they might think about is on Seder night, we know we say the matzah, this is the matzah mitzvah, this is the morah mitzvah. And then when we get to the Pesach, what does it say in the Haggadah? Al Pesach Zushana Oichlin. It says, do not point to the Zraya. Yeah, everyone remembers that in the Haggadah? That's what it says. Do not point. Actually, it's machlekes, not everyone agrees. But Lalacha, that's the common custom that we follow. We do not point. And the reason brought down, and the Mishabur explains, is because we don't want to chas v'shalom be magdish that piece of basa. We don't want to make a Nidre Hegdish. If we make this piece of meat into hekdesh, we're going to run into a lot of problems. It's going to be asur b'ano. We can't derive any benefit from it. We definitely do not want that in our house. So one of the famous cases of nidre hekdesh is this halacha of avoiding nidre hekdesh. But that was the first thing that came to mind. But who could think of, anyone has a little bit of a background in the Dharam? A little bit, anyone a little bit familiar with nidre hekdesh? Where it might come up on at least a weekly basis in a house? We have nidre hekdesh. So it might really depend on your rebbetzins. It might depend. Very good. Very good, Rabbi Mayevsky. Depends on rebbetzins. Depends if they're going to be chalas. So Rabbi Mayevsky was my teacher. Taught me how to learn. Still learning. So if your wife makes challah and she's mafrish the challah min ha'isa, she bakes dough and she takes out the challah which you have to take out from the isa, that's considered nidre hekdesh. You just turn that piece of dough into hekdesh, into din truma. And truma is a din hekdesh.
But is it really nidre hekdesh?
It's nidre hekdesh. It's nidre
mafrish challah. It becomes hekdesh.
Very good. It's a very good question. So in Karbanos, when it comes to Nidre Hekdesh, the whole thing works by sanctifying something, by designating is a better word, by designating something as Hekdesh. When you designate something as Hekdesh, that actually is the halach of Nidre Hekdesh. You don't even have to speak it out. The Gemara says, we'll hopefully get to this point also, the Gemara talks about the fact that by Hekdesh, it's Chal, it takes place, even b'machshava, even if you think about it. So you don't even actually have to say the words, this is Chala. But either way, when you designate something as a din hekdesh, so that is a nidre hekdesh. Okay, so why is this so important? And where does it come out, halacha l'maisa? So this is something which I'm not sure everyone's aware of. Challah, we know about it, it's a nice mitzvah, we know that it's something, big schus for women. But people don't realize about it, it's 100% completely treif. What do I mean by that? What do I mean by challah is 100% completely treif? The only one that's allowed to eat challah, right, in the Torah is a kohen who's tahor. A kohen who's tahor. Okay. Nowadays, we don't have any kahanim or tahirim. We hope we have some kahanim. Some kahanim have some friends who have yichus going back from a very long time. By Shade, I think some of them even. The Rappaport mishpacha. My close friend, the young Rappaport, his brother should be well. He was in a bad car accident, I don't know if you heard. From the Rappaport family, there for kahanim yuchasim for centuries. Anyway, so you have some kohanim that are miyuchasim, that do have some type of sefer yuchasim, but nowadays these kohanim, they're not tohirim, they're tame, and therefore they wouldn't be able to eat the challah. So nowadays no one can eat the challah. It's treif, as it's been treifus. Not only is it treif, it's actually worse than most treifus. Most treifus, when we talk about not kosher food, is a lav. There's misa b'dei shemayim. So challah is something that's not kosher. Yeah. You can't eat the challah. Why is this important? Because sometimes people put it in the oven and they're not so careful and they don't realize when they want to burn it and they want to make it totally kalal. Most people do have the custom to do that, to burn the challah, to be seirif, the truma tmeya. But not everyone does. Some people like to avoid the issue. But sometimes people run into problems. Why? What's going to end up happening is at times you'll find that the challah opened up, the tinfoil wasn't really covering the challah well, and you just cook treifas inside your oven. Oh, so do you treif up the oven? What could you do now? No, it was learning the Dharam, what could we do?
Shoil on the
nether. Shoil on the nether. And that's the lacha. If a person put challah in his oven, and he realized that there's a problem, he could treif up his food, he shoil on the nether. And now there's no longer, that challah is no longer challah, and as it didn't tevel, everything reverts back. You have to be mafresh chal again.
What about
very good. So now we'll get to that in a minute. So there are two different scenarios that we have over here. Rabbi Levine's asking wonderful
welcome
questions.
Welcome.
What?
So
the question is mafresh mokum achar. So if we have some type of anything left from the isa, a din tevel that we could mafresh from, then a chanami that we could do. That's halach we find by trumas and by other things that we leave at the end and we could be mafresh from the chal that we have left. Fine. So if we have what left to be mafresh from, so that's kavalik. That would be very good and that'll help us as far as the chala, which is be'en, the piece of chala that we have in the oven, which is treif. Fine. and we could take care of that, and as long as we have dough left to be mafrish from, so then we'll have a way to matir, to make permissible the rest of the dough, and the rest of the dough will become mutter when we're mafrish chal again. So in other words, just to summarize what we said so far, because it's about to get a little bit complicated. If you have a dough, we have a batter, we pull out the challah. If we realize that there's a mistake in what we did, because the challah, which is treif, not kosher, not meaning to say you can't eat it, the challah treifed up, let's say, our food or the oven or whatever it is, we want to be shoyl on the neder, and we want to make it revert it back to tevel. So that's great and fine, as long as we have other iso to be mafresh from. And now, once again, we'll go back to being that everything's mutter, and we'll have our piece of challah, which is asa for us to eat.
Is there any way to kasher it? Kasher, you need water and shisha.
Oh, that's a very good question. You mean because of which issue? Referring to Darashish Matirin? I'm not sure which issue you're referring to. It's a very good question, because there are different isurim, like Darashish Matirin, for example. There are different isurim that are not batal b'shishim. In this case, you would be able to kasher the oven. I mean, if we're talking about kasher in the oven, if it's batal or not, it would be told on whether it's a din davar sheish matirin or not, a din of chal. Would it have a truma is batal b'meir, specifically by yavish b'yavish min b'mina? It could happen.
Does chal have that love of truma?
Yeah, as the same halacha, rabbi knows different.
Yeah,
he was pointing out that Chal and Shuma have the same halacha, that's Batal B'meya. Yeah. Fine, but that's only by Yavish B'Yavish Min B'Mina. That's only if you have a situation where you have pieces of dough, dry dough, and then they're mixed up, and you have to hold that dough as a Din Yavish B'Yavish, which is a famous question when it comes to Chos Pesach. I'm not going to get into now, I don't want to cause big controversies here in the Kollel. And Pesach's in a long time anyway, so why bother? But there's a huge controversy regarding this shiloh of whether dough is mixed up in batter has a din yavish b'yavish alach b'alach, and it actually made certain rabbanim in different places in the world. So other kashrus organizations in other places in the world are matering a chiyuv karis. Okay, so like I said, I'm not getting into that because the controversy. Okay.
If you can't, yeshua means what? You have to go to a chacham or three people to have a batal.
Oh, very good.
Until then, what you baked is you have to put on the side, obviously you can't use that challah, regular challah, not the challah, yeah. Piece of challah. You baked it, but now you know you did something that it has a little surface until you show. So right. What happens to the actual challah, the full-fledged challah that you made? You have to put it on the side, and it's also until you, the shayl is gives you a heter.
Yeah, you have to take care
it's
of
totally,
it.
Totally
I mean, depends on what the situation is. We spoke about it a minute ago. You put it in the oven, so right. It might not be that you messed up the challah. You might have messed up the challahs that you're making for Shabbos,
size,
the big ones,
full-size
full size challahs that you're going to eat. It might be a situation where you didn't mess those up. But however, if you do shoyl on the challah, right, then the challahs that you baked will revert back to tevel.
But meanwhile, it's also about no. The other challahs, the shtikl challah that you
right.
Because if it's straight for a cook, it has an impact on what you're cooking in the oven, right?
Yeah, 100%. Meaning,
so whatever, if I made 10 challahs, 5 challahs in the oven,
yeah,
and the shtikl challah is there and it didn't get burned up, it was uncovered, so it means I can't use any of the other challahs till
you take care of it, you take care of the problem. Yeah, it's not a hard thing to do. It's easy to be showing that there because you just need gimel hadyotis.
Or you can ask the husband can make for the neder.
No,
you can't be made. So you have to go to Chacham or three people.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. You have to be Shalana, you know, Tarsadar. We'll get into a certain issue that might come up also, something very fascinating, which might come up if we have time. Fine, Bemir Teshem. Okay, we'll see what happens. There is one very famous big debate, big Shaila, that was being fought over in Yerushalayim, in the streets of Yerushalayim, the last few years. When the Mar Rav Yashuv Zatzal was alive, there's a famous psak from Rav Yashuv. We were talking now in a situation where we had a piece that we were mafresh lechala, right? We were mafresh lechala, which is, we said, like a treifis, and we wanted to know if affected the oven or affected the chala, which was the chalas which were baking in the oven. Fine. And we discussed the fact that we could be shoyl on it.
Because it wasn't covered, you say?
Right? Let's say, for example, it wasn't covered, exactly. We said, like, yeah, 100%. Exactly. It wasn't if in a situation where it got uncovered or you didn't wrap it properly, the challah. So what's going to be in a case where the situation discussion is not revolving around the challahs? The situation now, we're revolving, we want to know, what about kashering the oven? There's blias. Let's say we assume that the challah, again, not the challahs that you're eating, but the challah that you're mafrish, was situated in a way that the blias went straight from the challah into the oven. How could that be? Let's say the best situation would be is that the tinfoil was uncovered and it's touching, exactly, the dough from the challah is touching the oven. Because otherwise, since it's a davar yavish, so we assume there's no zeya coming from a davar yavish in a tanner, in an oven. So let's say this piece of dough is touching the oven. So now you could trafe up your oven. So it's a big shayla. Can I make a shayla? Can I be shayla? Can I make a daras nadaram on the blias? The blias have a din challah. It's a din issa, a din challah. I want to go, I want to be shayla on the blias. This is a famous psak from Rabbi.
You make your shayla on everything? You make the shayla on the talit.
You're going to shayla on everything. You're mafresh, 100%.
So including the blias.
So it's including the blias. So the question is, this is the question that that they ask Rabbi Yashiv. Let's say there's a question, there's a situation exists where there's nothing left. You ate the challahs, and all that's left is the blias, the what was nivla, into the oven walls, and you want to be shayla on that.
Who says the shayla is chal davar shem mamash? The shayla is chal davar shem mamash. It's not chal davar. You need to be a davar sheyesh be mamash to be undone, so you can you could undo the chal of the davar gush, but not the blias. I mean, isn't that part of the shayla?
That definitely is part of the shayla. But this 100%. This is the questions between the two of you is as follows: when you are a shayla on a neder, then what happens when you're shayla on a neder? So it's mikaro, nothing happened, nothing took place. So if nothing took place, then you never had a challah here. If you never had a challah here, you never had blias here. But the shayla is, and this...
Today's daf.
Oh, it's today's daf? Oh, very good, very nice, beautiful. That's why I speak about Nadar.
No,
I'm sorry, I apologize.
Okay.
He was saying that this came up in today's daf. But anyway, so the situation was as follows. Let's say the only thing that you were mafish challah, okay? So you took out your piece of challah and you put it in the oven and you were baking your challahs and the challahs are no longer here. You want to kasher your oven by being shoyl on the shayla. You want to be shoyl on that you were mafish the challah and say that you no longer had a problem of you no longer had a problem with the challah asid the oven. So Rav Yashiv Paskin, he said it's a problem. It's a problematic thing to do. You can't make shayla in such a case because Rabbi Levine's taina. He said it's a davar shembo mamash, but it's a little bit more complex than that. Now it's a davar shembo mamash. What are you doing? You're going to revert back to saying that it's a din tevel. Now, if a situation arises where there's nothing else that you can be mafresh challah from, and you have no other dough to be mafresh on the other. On what you did already, in retrospect, in other words, you had these big challahs and you had the piece of challah you put in the oven, there's nothing else left, then it's not going to help anyways to be shayla on the neder. Because all you just did is you turned it into tevel and you ate tevel. So that for sure doesn't help that the Prima Gaon talks about. There you didn't accomplish anything. You took what was mutter to eat, the challahs for Shabbos, and if you made a shayla on the challah, it turned into a din tevel and then it wasn't mutter to eat anymore. So that doesn't help. That for sure doesn't help you. To just take away the challah your mafresh and turn it back into tevel.
If you ate already,
and there's nothing else left. Because then all you did was that you turned what you ate into tevel, and there's nothing else left. Let's say you have a situation where you ate the challahs, and the only thing that's left in the oven is blias, and you have some other dough that left that to be mafresh. So the shayla was, can I make a shayla to undo what was already, make it everything's tevel and be mafresh again from the dough that's left on the counter. So this Rav Yashiv says the problem. Why? Because in such a situation, the blias, which are in the tanner, is not something that we could turn back into tevel. There's nothing else. There's nothing about the blias that will allow them to have a frusha again. It's not shaykh again to have a frusha with the blias. This is not shaykh to have a frusha again with the blias because the davar shembo mamish. Therefore, in such a situation, you wouldn't be able to do shayla. Okay, this is a little bit of a complex situation where Hilchos Nedarim applies. I think I'm going to go to something a little bit less complex now. But this is Rabbi Yosha's Pesach. When it came, if someone was mafresh challah, they realized that they ran into problems in their oven. Yes, not everyone agreed. Other people said that, of course, you could do shayla. Why not? Just like if you have the piece of challah, like Rabbi Levine's case, we have a piece of challah in the oven, you could do shayla, and then you're oiker, the whole thing may occur, it never happened, it never took place. So too in this situation also, the Rabbi Yashiv said, what he said was a bit chumrah. Meaning, if you always held that it was mutter, and then Rabbi Yashiv said it was aser, so it became a big debate. It was a big debate in Yerushalayim, whether it could be shayl on the nether when all that's left in the oven was blius. Okay, I thought maybe let's go with the subject a little bit more light, as they say, a little bit more light. Okay, so first of all, my father wanted me to bring the sefer I worked on. For fear, it's called Aflos Adarim. I've told a few people, I think the biggest chiddush that the Aflos Adarim talks about, which should make it somewhat discussed in the Batei Medrash when the Olam learns Adarim, and I think for over 100 years, most people thought it was out of style to assume that a neder could be done written down. That a neder could be done written down. We know it's a pasuk in the Torah. When a person enunciates a vow, he enunciates a neder, then the neder is chal. So it seemed to be the ABCs of Nadarim would be, if a person doesn't actually use his mouth, his speech, then there is no vow that took place. So Aflos Adarim. What did you say?
You can bounce a check.
You could bounce a check.
Okay.
Could be. Okay, so Aflos Adarim brings back in all the discussion. I have actually written here because it's a little bit of a family history. If we're going back to the 17th century, the Chavos Yair, which I've spoken about before in different family occasions, because on my mother's mother's side is Yekish. I'm one quarter Yekish, one quarter German Jew, don't hold it against us. Yeah, we're one quarter Yekish, and we are Enekuch on that side from the Chavos Yair. The Chavos Yair was, like it says over here, I took it from, I think, Wikipedia a few years ago. Rabbi Yair Chaim Bachrach was one of the greatest rabbinic figures of the 17th century. Okay. And I only have a couple of pieces here, but it talks about over there as one of the great rabbis in Germany for most of his life. He took over from his grandfather. So famous, one of the famous things about the Chavos Yair, and there's a little family tidbit for my family. Not the Fruchter family, because it's from my mother's side, the Weitzman, really, the Joshua family, but now a lot of Weitzmans also. And the family tidbit is Chavos Yair is what Yair Bachrach named his sefer based on the Pesukim and the Parshas Matos. And then the Parshas Matos, Yair ben Menashe, called the places that he conquered, he called it Chavos Yair, which basically means the farms of Yair, like farms of Yair. But in Yiddish, just like in English, Chavos, Chava with the apostrophe S, so too in Yiddish also with the apostrophe Samach. Chavas Yair. That's how Yair. Chavas Yair was known. Chavas Yair was known as Chavas Yair because he was raised by his grandmother Chava. Chava happens to be a family name in the Joshua Weitzman family, and it comes from the Chavas Yair. So we have, came out every other generation. My daughter is named after my grandmother, Chava Bella. She's named Chava after my grandmother Chava, and she was named after, tracing back every third generation, we have a Chava going back all the way to the Chavos Yair. So anyways, that's a little family tidbit. The Chavos Yair was a famous Rav, like we said before, in the 17th century, and he was of the opinion that when the Torah talks about speech, so it's a concept called dibur, speech, and in halacha, sometimes something that we're not used to in the, you know, the colloquial vernacular, when we talk about speech, we often differentiate between speech and writing. We differentiate between speech and writing, but there's a sugya in Shas called ksiva kedibur. Is writing tantamount to speaking? That's a sugya in Shas. So the Chavos Yair was of the opinion that just like the sugya tells us in a few places that if you write, it's as if you spoke. The Chavos Yair was of the opinion that if you write a neder, it's as if you spoke your neder. And therefore, it will come out an important halacha l'maisa, that if you hold like the Chavos Yair, anytime you make a certain pledge, because we'll see in a minute that certain pledges are also considered nedarim. If you make a certain pledge in writing, according to Chavos Yair, you just made a neder. So the Flos Nedarim speaks at length about this opinion. He also is of the opinion, that a vow that's done, written down, a written vow, also has the lach of a vow, and therefore it has all the full authority, full tekef, the full authority that a vow has, and would also require Hataras Nedarim, for example, if you make a pledge in writing. That's still a very important thing that comes out from the Flos Nedarim based on the Chavos Yair. I think Roy. Oh, it's a very good shayla. I never thought about it. Could you do it? The question was, could you do a Hataras Nedarim in writing? Now, the shayla has nothing to do with this shayla, because really the shayla is going to have to do more with, could Beis Din do their acts in writing? Could you show something to Beis Din in writing, which is going to be a Sigim Epiyam Piksavim? Could Beis Din allow something in writing? It's going to be based on other halachic concepts. It's not going to be based on the halachic concept of Ksiva Kedibur, but it's definitely a good shayla. I never thought about it.
It would depend on if you have to be Mefarad the Nether or not. I mean, sometimes you have to explain exactly what the parameters of the Nether are.
I guess like you're saying, it depends what exactly has to come out in the whole Hataras Nedarim.
Right, could be.
Obviously, the assumption would be that Hataras Nedarim doesn't make sense by writing, because you need to come and talk to Beis Din, and you also, Beis Din is going to have to tell you, Beis Din is going to have to authorize, could be Matir and Eder, which I never found anyone say could be done in writing, but it could be given over. It doesn't necessarily have to be. Doesn't necessarily have to be with the person. Well, that's a discussion that Piyam picks up, right? If you could say over Taina to Beis Din in writing or not. But it's a side point. It's a good thought. Now, I think the mainstream psak anyways, and that's why I said it's a Pohachomais, mainstream psak is a Chiddush of Flos Nedarim. Mainstream psak always was, is that if you write down a neder, it doesn't have the halach of a neder. That's a mainstream psak. However, most pledges are going to be in a concept of nidret staka, which don't need speech at all. The only time you need speech is by nidret iser, which is like the nedarim like we mentioned by Rabbi Akiva's father-in-law, where he made a vow and he said to Akiva that he can't derive benefit from anything in his estate. And such a vow, a nidret iser, that would be where the discussion of ksiva kedibur is very relevant. And a vow, nidret staka, which is a pledge, it's less relevant, as we'll see. And as I'll move on to a few other ideas. Another famous concept when it comes to Nedarim, which my father was very excited about, is the Lachin Yerides and Reshid Dalid. Lavar al Minuk Ser Chatara. So Reshid Dalid Sif Aleph. Dvarim Mutarim Vayoidim Hashem Mutarim. Nagu Behem Iser. Let's say we're talking about a situation, it's based on a Gemara Nedarim, where a person takes upon himself a Chumrah. He acts out a Chumrah. He knows that something is not warranted, you don't have to do it according to Lacha, but he decides that he feels like this would be proper, he wants to take upon this Chumrah. So the Lacha says, and it's important to Lashon, the Lacha is, Aser lahatiron bahem. It's forbidden to be matir to them. Now what these words mean in the Gemara is actually two opinions in Shulchan Aruch. The first opinion, that's how we paskin, that's what Ramah says, we paskin this way, Asr lahatir bahem means that it's binding. Someone who acts even one time if they plan on doing it consistently, or three times if they didn't have a plan to do it consistently. Again, one time if they have a plan on doing it consistently, or three times if they did an act, a chumrah, three times if they didn't plan on doing it consistently, it's binding, and we can't just matir, we can't just allow them to ignore the fact that they acted in a chumrah way, in a stringent way. There's another opinion that it means us. Right, but they could, which I was going to speak out in a second, but I'll speak out now, but they could be matir neder. The second opinion says that asla tiram behem means you can't even be matir the neder. We don't paskin like that. We paskin you could be matir the neder. It's not given dwell on the second opinion right now, especially due to the time. We paskin that you are allowed to be matir the neder. But still, it's a very, very important and very relevant halacha l'maaseh. I'll give you a couple of very quick examples. First of all, what is probably the most famous psukim for Moshe Feinstein, I think, for most people, one of the most famous psukim in America, is the concept of Chol Stam, not having Chol Yisrael. I think for many people, that's like when they talk about Moshe's toikiv, that he was able to write down such a beautiful tshuva l'halacha accepted by Gantz Klal Yisrael kamat as Ikar Halacha L'maisa, which is that Chol Yisrael, Chol Stam, excuse me, is not Aser. Even though, according to the Mishnah, it would seem to be Aser. According to the Mishnah, it would seem to be Aser. So Rav Moshe explains, that Chol Stam is not Aser, and you're not obligated to drink what we call Chol Yisrael. It happens to be, for example, myself, I moved to Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael, Rav Moshe's Pesach is not as accepted, mainly because you're in Eretz Yisrael, everyone's Jews. It would be kind of funny not to drink Chol Yisrael. Besides for that, obviously you have to know if Rav Moshe's Pesach of the FDA and the government regulations in America would apply to Israel or not. That would be another shaila. But fine, the Iker point is that many people in Eretz Yisrael don't rely on the kula of Rav Moshe. So for example, like myself, when I come back to America, so since I'm already, once I moved there to Israel 13 years ago, I already took upon that I should be stringent and not drinking Chol Stam anymore. So I took upon myself in a way that like the Shulchan Aruch discusses, in a way that's binding. And Rav Moshe writes the following at the end of his tshuva, in Simen Mem Zayin, Chelek Alef Yeridei Simen Mem Zayin. V'mecha nohog lahachmir. Let's say somebody took upon himself this minig of three times or one time if they plan on doing it consistently, or three times of just drinking Chol Yisrael.
So even if inadvertently you just happen to drink three times Chol Yisrael, that's already
inadvertently by accident, or
no. You didn't have any intention. It's just that was
No. You had to know. You had to know it's Chol Yisrael.
Well, you knew it's Chol Yisrael, but that was that was the.
You have to be doing.
That was what was about.
No, you have to be doing it, but tourists that you feel you're taking something upon yourself. But even if you didn't think of doing it consistently forever, right. If you thought about doing it consistently, first time it's very binding with Shulchan Aruch Paskins. But if it's, you didn't think about it, just, okay, this sounds like a good idea. And then the next day again, and the third time, you did it three times in a row. So that's what the Rav Moshe says at the end of this tshuva. So he says,
did you say that when I'm in Israel, I'll have Chol Yisrael? Or first of all, I won't. I mean, could you make it like that?
That's a very good question. But that's basically what you're pointing at is, nothing to do specifically with this shaila. You point out when you take upon a chumrah, could you modify that the chumrah wouldn't be binding for you? So that you can do. If you
doesn't become a minik that you
Okay, very good. That might fall into another category. We'll try to get there. That's a very good shaila. But going back to what's your name?
Chaim.
Going back to Chaim's point. Oh wow.
Doctor.
Okay, very nice. Nice to meet you. So going back to Chaim's point, it's a very important point, la'alacha. If a person consciously modifies this stringency, then he won't be bound without parameters, and it would be dependent on what he binds himself to. So it's a very good point. What a person consciously thinks, that's what would bind him. So Rav Moshe points out a very important halacha over here. He says, why did the person take this chumrah? Did he take this chumrah because he saw Rav Moshe's tshuva? Rav Moshe is really saying this. Without saying these words, this is what he's implying between the lines. Did he take my tshuva and rip it up and laugh at me and say that I don't know what I'm talking about? If he did that, then what he did is a mistake and is not binding at all, because he doesn't know what he's talking about, says Rav Moshe, and therefore it wouldn't be considered as if he took upon himself a chumrah, because he doesn't even realize that it's a chumrah. He thinks he has to do it and he doesn't have to do it. That's what Rav Moshe explains. If Rav Moshe writes, Paskins, that if this Yid thinks that Rav Moshe is wrong, then it wouldn't be binding. But if the Yid knows that Rav Moshe is right, and Me'ikar HaDin Chol Stam is Mutter, and it takes upon himself a stringency, then it would be us, it would be binding on this person, like myself, to drink Chol Stam. And if I want to drink Chol Stam, I need to be Matir Neder. Let's say I'm in a situation where I'm in my parents' house, let's say, and we have we don't have three people around, let's say, and I'm not sure if a certain item was effective from Chol Stam or not. Try to think of a good example. Very good. Well, I'm trying to think of a good example that might come up. Maybe like something like mochik baking, something like a baking, an object that was baked, but we're not sure if it became mochik. So this is a very interesting halacha. We're actually knowing your day now in Kailo, Moshi. So one of the classic discussions in Yeridah, the first halacha in Hilchos Tarev is the halacha of te'ima, having someone taste something for me and telling me whether it's kosher or not. So obviously, most situations, you can't have a Jew, a Yid, taste something and tell me whether it's kosher or not. Because if it's not kosher, how can a Jew taste something and tell if it's kosher? So all the places can point out that there's one exception, that's the exception of Nedarim. When it comes to Nedarim is an individual thing. A Neder is only usher for the person who makes the Neder. In the times of the Gemara where you had a Kohen Tohar, Chala is only usher to Yisrael. But a Kohen Tohar, it's Mutter to Yichala. Right? A Kohen Tohar is Mutter to Yichala. So the Gemara talks about such a case. It talks about Truma. And it says if Yisrael wants to know if this item was affected from a Truma item, for example, Truma grape juice was in some type of mixture. And you want to know now if my salad, which had a salad dressing that someone put like a little grape juice for flavoring, you want to know if it tastes like this grape juice. So the Kohen comes, he eats the salad, he says, no, I don't taste any grape juice here. So therefore we say that this truma was batal. This gets into, I forgot who mentioned.
Mayor.
Oh, it's Nathaniel,
but that's right.
The mayor. Oh, okay. Anyway. So you mentioned before that they have bittul. So here it's bittul by shishim. Tzach b'lach is a shal of tam. So if you don't taste the grape juice in the dressing, then it'll be mutter to eat the salad. The Yisroel will be able to eat the salad because we say if you don't taste the truma in the salad dressing. So too in such a situation, somebody who relies on a Moshe, right? Halach l'mais relies on a Moshe, and he paskins that Cholov Stam's mutter, will be able to have this baked good that we don't know if it tastes like mochiks or not. We don't know if the Cholov Stam caused it to taste mochiks or not. This mochiks cake or mochiks pancake, whatever it is. And therefore we could have someone, and Halach l'maisa, we usually paskin, most paskin paskin, any Jew is allowed to taste it. Doesn't have to be a professional chef. Chachmus Adam is machmir, but most paskin asking anyone could taste it. So we could have somebody in the family taste it. If we don't have three people, it could be Matar Neder at that point. And if it doesn't taste like Mochiks, then somebody who doesn't eat Chavsol will be able to taste it. So that's a very interesting halachal maisa when it comes to Nedarim. So you have 2 points there. First of all, you have the point of this chumrah of taking it upon yourself by Chav Yisrael. And then we also have this point that besides for Ataras Nedarim, sometimes we have a very rare, almost an obsolete halacha called te'ima, because Ashkenazim and most Sfaradim don't rely on te'ima. We don't trust a goy to taste it. Ayin Shulchan Aruch, it's a complicated halacha. We don't rely on it, so it's a somewhat obsolete halacha. This would be an example where the Paiskim do allow a Jew to taste the food and tell me whether it's kosher or not. Okay, so another very, very important halacha over here is you have to realize that what you're doing is a stringency. I want to be machmir. If you think you have to be machmir, says Rav Moshe, so then it's not binding from the halacha. Then the whole thing's a mistake. Another very famous situation where this comes up might be with kashrus organizations. The person has a certain kashrus organization which they believe is something they don't want to rely on, based on something real, not based on politics. It has to be something that makes it binding. Let me give you another example. It's not true for a Moshe, a photocopy here. It's Yerdei Chilek Aleph, Simen Pei Aleph. It's discussing different garbs, different methods of clothing that the Yidden brought over from Europe, or I should really say, did not bring over from Europe. And Rav Moshe was discussing whether the communities need to be Mater Neder if they're no longer dressing in the way that they were dressing. And most of Rav Moshe's tshuva focuses around the fact that a form of garb for most situations probably did not fall under the umbrella, does not fall under the halachas of stringencies. It might fall under some type of social aspects of Yiddishkeit, but it doesn't fall under the halachic aspects of Yiddishkeit will make a binding chumrah. Therefore, the same thing will go into kashrus organizations. The person is machmer for political reasons, that would be similar to a social garb. He liked to wear a nice frock. He liked to, I don't know what they used to wear, rekel, let's say. Somebody came from a certain part in Europe, they were spavik, certain gerers, right? or different types of garb that people wore. Or even, okay, I was about to say gartel, but a gartel probably would be different, because a gartel would be totally on a stringency in halacha, based on a Gemara and Shabbos. Now I can get into it. And brachas, and a few two places. Anyway, so, but social garb, how a person dresses, is probably, Rav Moshe says, in most situations, is not going to be considered something under the umbrella of halacha. And therefore, it's not going to be a problem of where you can be mater neder. And he tells all the out there Europeans, don't worry, you're not going to have to be mater neder to not dress like an American. Okay, gavaldik, probably not much of a nafkamina, probably not a difference halacha ma'aseh for us. But it will play a very important role when it comes to kashrus organizations. If a person in general doesn't like to eat a certain kashrus organization because of political reasons, then that's not halachic reason. That's called something social. That's a he has a social problem. Maybe he doesn't want to be seen by his neighbor. Who knows? But he doesn't want to rely on a certain kashrus organization. That would not be considered a kabbalah, which you have to be matir neder for. However, if there is a real reason why he doesn't want to eat this kashrus organization, for example, the way they do the halachas of bdikas sakin after shechita, they know this kashrus organization is very mekel. There's a famous shmuz amongst the kashrus organizations. I remember I was learning in smicha, is that the oilam and smicha was very busy with this, the different leniencies that different kashrus organizations have, which is really a leniency against what the Shulchan Aruch says, but sometimes for mass production it's necessary. So if a person does want to take upon himself a stringency, not because he thinks it's halacha l'maisa, because if we paskin, if the rabbanim paskin that's not halacha l'maisa, meaning to say it's mutter to rely on this kashrus organization, but he's taking upon himself as a chumra, that's when Rav Moshe, like we saw before, says then it will be binding his custom that he's taking upon himself a chumra. In such a situation, he'll have to either have either the te'ima, for example, if it was a kashrus a meat, chicken, he doesn't want to rely on that shechita. And then there's a question whether a certain parva item was effective from the chicken, whether it tastes fleshless or not. Maybe it could rely on te'ima, or I have to be mater nedel. I'll need to have one or the other in order to eat from something that might have been effective from that kashrus organization that is machmer not to eat. Yes, sorry. What?
I was going to ask you, according to Rav Moshe about the garb, suppose you start to put on, you're American now, your grandson, whatever, right. You want to put on a package and all that. And you do it for, and then you want to change. You don't want to do it anymore. And Rav Moshe say, no, it's only a social thing. I don't need any heter or whatever. That chumra,
So really, it's going to depend. Like Rav Moshe himself says, depends if there's any reason halachically. Is there a chumra halachically that a person's after? If there's a certain halachic chumra, like he wants a certain big day Shabbos that he wasn't comfortable with. I'll give you an example. I have a chavrusa that told me he has a. The opposite of a fetish. Someone help me, I've been in Israel for a long time. What's the opposite of a fetish? The opposite of a fetish. Something you don't like. You don't like ties. Well, there's like a word for it, don't you? Dislike, aversion. Thank you. That was what I was looking for. That's an aversion to ties. Thank you. That was what I was like. He has such an aversion to ties that sometimes he actually works as a lawyer. He came to court without a tie, and the judge said to him, this is how you show up to court. The judge happened to be Jewish. He says, this is how you would go to shul? And he answered, that's what happened? And he answered, yes, because he has an aversion to ties. Now, many people in the Litvish Olam, not in the Hasidish Olam, but in the Litvish Olam, accepted that part of Big Day Shabbos is to wear a tie.
Just because they accept it doesn't make it
right. 100%. So if this person puts on a tie now and says, you know what, for Big Day Shabbos purposes, this is a proper thing to do for Big Day Shabbos, he's trying to be machmer to have
unless
a big...
Unless he would say specifically, I'm putting on a tie as a Big Day Shabbos, which I will do consistently,
or three
you
times.
You know, if I put on one night day a nice hat...
100%, right. If three times, three Shabbos in a row, he wears a tie, the Chavit Shabbos, as long as he knows that's the Chavit Shabbos, then it could be binding, because that is something Big Day Shabbos. It is considered he did it for a Chumra Big Day Shabbos. The halacha is that you're not allowed to wear Big Day Chol. If you feel like your Big Day Shabbos has a tie, you're not allowed to revert back to wearing Big Day Chol. There might be a situation where it has to be Matir Neder. It happens to be that there are really tons and tons, even though we started by saying that there aren't so many halacha l'maaseh shaylos, It's because the classic type of Nadarim isn't Halach L'maisa. But as we see, there's so many more. I could go on with many more.
They were a tie every shot, except when it starts getting hot. July, so
that's very good shot. That's a very, very good shot.
That goes back.
This all goes back to Dr. Babbage's Chiddush, which is Halach L'maisa. Dr. Babbage said, if the person originally wears the big day Shabbos, knowing that he can't take upon this chumrah in the summer, or when he's in Eretz Yisrael, or I'm trying to think of some other situations, whatever, on vacation, let's say, if he modifies originally, never took upon himself this chumrah. But if he did, if he took it blanketly, either three times blanketly, or one time he said consistently, "I'm going to wear a tie for Shabbos," then he would have to be matir neder. He would have to be matir neder. The first time he says, "I'm not going to be Big Day Shabbos anymore. I don't want to wear a tie for Big Day Shabbos. I don't have to matir neder." Now, obviously, if a person's stuck, he's not doing it because he doesn't want to desecrate Shabbos. He just lost his tie. Yeah, that's a different situation. That's not the same situation. That's very honest. I don't want to get involved in such a shaila because that probably depends on what exactly the story is.
You have a very interesting thing. A guy grows up, let's say, in a square. He wears the Levusha square, he wears the boots, whatever. He doesn't do it because the halacha or the chum is there. That's the way he grew up in the house.
Very good.
But someone becomes Baal Tshuva and he goes and lives in a square and then he decides, "I'm going to put on the Levush because it's a either this," so he's stuck with it as never.
The very interesting point, you know what talks about Moshe Feinstein, this tshuva. Doesn't mention exactly what you said about Baal Tshuva, but kemat, almost word for word, these different points he makes. He talks about whether it's a family minhag, if that's binding on the children. He talks about if someone takes it upon himself. Very good. So if you want to read up on it, Yerdei Chelek Al Sun Pei Aleph is a long tshuva.
That the minhag of not making a chesed the last half of the month, he says it's not a minig amaratzim, it's a minig kibbutz, because there's no makar for it. And people decide it, and there's nothing to be signed.
There's no makar? I'm not sure there's no makar.
Yeah, he says it's.
Yeah.
I wanted just to show that just the opposite.
The mayor
says the person grew up in square. What if you go the other way? The person grew up in square and he had big day shabbos. And then he decides, "I don't
want
to do this anyway." Once
right.
Right.
Well,
so,
pum fa right. 100%. So, Moshe does pask lachol ma'is about that if a person never accepted upon himself, he was just born into it, that it wouldn't be binding. A person does not have to keep. It's not called binding. So you don't have to keep. You don't have to keep what you're born into. The malbish of your family is not binding. But if you yourself took it upon yourself, and you, this is how you had your big day Shabbos, then already, again, that would be eating gebrucks also. Eating gebrucks. Eating gebrucks might be a good example. Now, pas palter and aseis mechu is a little different, because one of the important discussions here is that if it's something that's accepted by Klal Yisrael at large, then you don't have the right to be matir neder. So, for example, there's a couple of tshuvas. We're not going to talk about them, but for example, of Shmuel Vosner Zatzal, who passed away very recently in Eretz Yisrael, had a tshuva about Einus or Zarua, a certain stringency in Hilchos Nida, Einus or Zarua. He discussed whether this is going to fall under the umbrella of a minig of Klal Yisrael, that you don't have the right to be mater, or it's considered something that different kehilas accepted and certain ones didn't, and then maybe under certain circumstances you were able to be mater neder. He paskin that for this chumra, this stringency of being perish from a certain harchakas from your wife in Vestas, in Aynas or Zarua, the Reb Shmuel Vosner paskin that there was no mitigant klayasol to be matter such an other. That's what he said. We don't find that we're matter such a thing if a person is stringent on it. This would be similar to pas palter, that klayasol, this type of concept, when klayasol takes a chumra upon itself, and as a general whole, they take a chumrah upon themselves. Even if you don't have that chumrah, still you can't be matir a neder. It's a neder that Klal Yisrael took upon themselves, and you don't have the right to be matir a neder because it's halacha specifically that Klal Yisrael holds its mutter, and you decide it's a chumrah. But the chumrah pas palter is something universal. It's something that all of Klal Yisrael holds as a chumrah during Aseres Metshuva that's proper to do.
I get upset when I see the malachim say, "This is the way the Torah belt is noyed."
Okay.
Who supplies right. that state?
I agree with you, yes.
The marshal, you have the homers of Ger.
The Kehillas, the Kehillas, 100%. 100%.
Right? So that's not a Mekubal by Avishmael.
Right, 100%. So this happens to be one of the most important places, we'll end with this, one of the most important places in Shulchan Aruch where we see the halachic concept of a community, a Kehillah, is this very same halacha. Our halacha of Siman Reish Dalet, of things that people are upon Mekubal, upon themselves. One of the most important things to keep in mind in Halacha L'maisa is that Kehillas, Nar Nar Pashte, there are a lot of different flowing rivers in Klal Yisrael. And each one, each Kehillah, each group of people, each group of Yidden, based on either where their communities were, either in Europe, or it's Israel, or now in America, they took upon themselves different minhag and different customs. And here is one place where we find that in Halacha, it's recognized the concept of a Kehillah. And if this is something that you also felt like you want to be part of this kehillah and you accepted those stringencies, then you'll be bound by the stringencies of that kehillah. But if not, then you're not at all bound by the stringencies of that kehillah.
So I think it's a
100. Very good, perfect example. Thank you, Rabbi Emayevsky. You can't be matir ned if you're Ashkenazi Jew. You can't be matir ned there on eating kidneys. So that's a perfect example. So I want to end up, if a woman marries a Sfaradi. If a woman marries a Sfaradi.
Oh, yeah.
So just modifying. So I just end off with this bracha that on this point, the Naharanar Pash to everyone in their kehilo, that looks like somewhat a uniform group, but like every group in America, usually have people come from different places and different backgrounds, and everyone, Mirtz Hashem, should continue to grow at the shtag and this wonderful Makom Torah over here, everyone in there with their minhagim and their ways of shtagging and turning your shemayim. Thank you, Rabbi Levin. I'm not sure what the press over here.
Where do you live?
Which one? How are they doing?
My son was living there.